Shortly past 10:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Don Maloney. Don is the Arizona Coyotes general manager. Don, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Don, have to start with ownership, because I believe we are contractually obligated to start with that one question at the start of any Coyotes interview.
No. That's ancient history. That's old, old news. Everything's good. Everything's settled. We do have owners in place that hopefully we can figure out where we're going to play hockey in the next couple of years, but it's all good in that. We have a lot of stability here, and the big problem is just the performance of the team on the ice, which is obviously my responsibility. But from an ownership standpoint, everything's good.
Absolutely, and that's great to hear that ownership's good. We're glad to hear there's a solid footing. You know, this is more of a general sort of relationship question. How is your relationship with Andrew Barraway different than previous ownership groups?
Well, you know, when you say previous ownership groups, you know, that's ancient history, too, because it's been a long, long time. I had a very good relationship with Bill Daly and Gary Bettman, who ran our team for, I think it was 5 years or something. But long story short, Andrew, it's really a group of people. And this is well documented. It's a group got together primarily from Calgary businessmen. Andrew came in last year and invested more money into the team, which is always a good thing. So it's been fun. He actually resides in the East. He does come out here. We do have regular discussions. I actually report to Gary Drummond, is one of our ownership groups. He's sort of responsible for the hockey side. I do report to Gary. He's a Regina businessman. But the good thing with Gary, he's got a vast background in hockey, understands the game, understands the combination of patience to develop young people, the resources you need to be successful, and hopefully over the next little while here, we can grow this thing into a championship.
Don, we had Sean Burke on the show last year, who you know very well. He was a former Arizona Coyotes coach, and he said on the show last year that the team's lack of success in drafting had reared its ugly head last season and some of the seasons prior, and maybe that's going to change a little bit with some of the draft picks that have been made lately, Max Domi, Dylan Strome. But has the organization made any significant changes in regards to its drafting strategy and what it looks for in a player?
Well, it's such an inexact science, drafting. Mm-hmm. We're all... At the end of the day, you have to draft well. I mean, Winnipeg is the perfect guy. I think Winnipeg's reservist is as good as anybody. I think Kevin and his staff have done a terrific job with the prospects coming. Obviously, they're not going to help tonight in the same with our draft. Dylan Stone's not going to help us tonight against Los Angeles. But what happened when we had the work stoppage, we had to cut back in a lot of areas, and scouting was one of them. And probably the biggest area that we've spruced up is our European scouting. We had one part-time scout in Europe. We just said we had, during our time without an owner, we said we just have X amount available, so let's just concentrate on North America, and we didn't spend a lot of time in Europe. And we all know that's where a lot of the skill and the scoring is coming from, or at least a good portion of it. So I do think we've done a lot of things internally with this new ownership group. They've invested more in their scouting staff. Really invested in our development program. We do have a full-time development coach. We've got Johnny Shai has come in. Not only is he part of our analytics department, but he's overseeing all our player development. So, you don't see those things on the ice necessarily in a year or two, but the hope is over time that you have a good program. Tim Bernhardt is our head amateur scout. He had a long time long-time head scout for Dallas. He's been now in the head position for a couple seasons, and I like where we're at. We obviously would all like to have the stars in your system, but with Dylan Strome and Merkley, with Perlini, we feel like we have enough people there that can be more than just fillers. That can be top three line or top four defensemen. So time will tell.
You know, Don, in an era where coaches don't last very long, I mean, you see in the NBA last night, the coach goes to David Black, goes to game six of the finals, is 30-11 or whatever it is, and he gets let go in the middle of the season. Why have you felt so comfortable and comfortable enough to keep Dave Tippett as the head coach of the Coyotes since 2009?
Well, you guys, I mean, Tip is one of the best in the game. I really feel it. I think we have a common vision, a thought on players and how we have to play. I mean, we, you know, again, I go back to Winnipeg. We're quite similar. We're not a cap team. We have to watch our nickels and dimes. We are a budget team, and we have to get the most of what we have. Tip is a terrific coach. His details are second none, and there's never a time, I don't think, going into the game that we're not prepared or we haven't done everything we possibly could to give our team a best chance for success. And so, you know, the relationship is strong. I like where Tip is at. I think he's, you know, he's always been able to sort of put people in the right roles to have as much success. And at the end of the day, I have to get him better players. I mean, we have to. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes good players. We can't lose good players. We have to add more of them. And the trouble right now is, you know, you look at Max Domi and Anthony DeClaire. We have this young Tobias Reeders, 22. And you know, we need them to be frontline regular producing players. But unfortunately, 20-year-olds have their ups and downs, and we're feeling a little bit right now that our offense is a little bit starved right now. But hopefully, it'll change tonight. We have LA coming, so we're always up.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Arizona Coyotes general manager Don Maloney. And Don, you just mentioned that the team's a little bit offensively starved. And earlier in the season, there was a lot of talk throughout the NHL about the lack of goals. You know, goal scoring is the problem. Do you believe that in the NHL currently there is a goal scoring problem?
Not at all. I mean, I mean, the teams are well coached. The goaltenders are sometimes your best athletes. I just think it's the evolution of the game. I mean, Chicago doesn't seem to have a problem scoring. We actually have been scoring at a fairly efficiently at 5-on-5. Our power play has gotten a little self-conscious, to be honest here. But, I mean, maybe I'm a little old school. I love a 2-1 game. If it's hard played, scoring chances, checking. You know, everybody gets so wrapped up in goals, 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 goals. But, I mean, some of the best games you see played are those tight games that are exciting, so I don't believe that at all. Would we like to score more? Absolutely. We'd also like to be able to keep the other team from scoring. So I'm not overly concerned. There's an ebb and flow to the scoring every season. There's little tweaks that maybe have to be looked at, but I still think the game is very exciting most nights. And whether, you know, 10 goals are scored or 2 goals are scored, it's still exciting to me.
Don, we wanted to ask you about John Scott. He was recently traded to the Montreal Canadiens. You, of course, know that because you traded John Scott to the Montreal Canadiens. But there was a lot of speculation that somehow, you know, and I wasn't one of these people that thought this was the reason why he was traded to Montreal, was to somehow keep him out of the All-Star game. I mean, can you address that, and why was John Scott traded to Montreal?
Oh, please. I mean, I am so sick of this conversation. Yeah. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever experienced in my life as a manager. This whole idea that we would somehow conspire with the league to send him to the, I mean, it's so insane that people are even talking about it. There's very, you know, all you have to do is look at it. There's two things involved. It's very simple. We have a 23-man roster. We have to create a roster spot. We like Tenorti. He's a 22-year-old young developing defenseman. In order to make that deal financially, we had to find a way to make the contracts work. John Scott, if you just look at our contracts, was the only guy that we could fit in there to augment the money. It's that simple. We don't stop our business because John Scott is an All-Star. Other players have been traded who've been elected to the All-Star game and subsequently traded prior to the game. So the furor that this created is just, again, this is the last time I'm going to speak on it because I don't read anything about it. It's so insane that I just can't believe people actually, you know, talk about this.
Social media is a great thing, isn't it, Don?
Well, I went on that rant, Don. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said, oh, my God. I mean, it really is. I mean, people, it's just insanity.
Yeah, I went on that rant on the show last week about how this is still being talked about. We felt like we had to ask you, but we'll move on from that. And, you know, earlier when the Coyotes were in town and through Winnipeg, Don, you had mentioned, you were talking about Blake Wheeler, obviously, you know, kind words to say about him in terms of the skill level and such. You said losing him for the Arizona organization was still a sore spot for you. Why was it? Why is that still a sore spot?
Well, he's a premier player. He's a frontline all-star level player, in my opinion. Now, you know, obviously, you know, like all young players, it took him a while to get to the level he's at today. And when we end up getting a second round pick for him. And again, you hope you hit on a home run in the second round, but you don't replace a frontline winger like that. So this is ancient history and a long time ago.
Yeah,
and
then,
but when you lose a frontline player basically for very, very, very little, that hurts your organization long term. You can't. We all know how hard it is to find good players, let alone first and second mm-hmm. liners, and to have one walk out the door the way that occurred, it was still bugs me, to be honest with you.
Don Maloney's our guest. He's the Arizona Coyotes general manager. Don, to that point about the way you lost Blake Wheeler, I mean, do you think that rule needs to be changed, the one that allowed Wheeler to play out his college career and then become then be able to sign elsewhere? Do you think that that should be changed to protect the drafting team from losing a developing asset?
Well, I don't know, guys. I mean, we have the same. You have the same situation in junior hockey. You have the rights for 2 years with Blake. We have his rights for 4 years. I really think we messed up on that. I don't think we showed him enough attention his final season. You know, most players that get drafted, they're proud of it. Whether they're putting on a Coyote jersey or a Jet jersey, or it doesn't matter where they're playing, they're just proud to be part of an organization. If you treat the players right and obviously, first-round picks may need a little bit more attention than you might give a fifth-round pick. But all in all, I don't lose any sleep over what happened. It is a part of our game, and we've learned from it. Next time, when we get players now, you pay attention and you give them all the attention and help to bring them along during the time that you have the rights. And in Blake's case, we lost him, and hopefully, it doesn't happen again to us.
Don, we wanted to ask you about Bradtree Living. We had him on the show before, and he was terrific. And he, of course, used to be the assistant general manager with you in Arizona. He's now, of course, the general manager in Calgary. How much satisfaction have you gotten personally from seeing a former coworker going in, getting hired, and getting a general manager spot with another team? And to a second part of that question, what makes Brad such a good executive?
Well, I didn't get much satisfaction last year when they beat us five times, Calgary. I was feeling a little like I'd like to strangle them, to be honest with you. But this year we've actually beat Calgary for once, so I'm feeling a little bit better about Brad and all the good things. So Brad is, first of all, he's really a good person. And you talk about people that earn the right to be a manager. I mean, Brad, his work ethic was second to none. He's a sociable guy. He's a personal guy. There's nowhere he won't go. There's nobody he won't talk to. I think he's in touch with. He's as active as any manager on the phone to keep in touch with the finger on the pulse of the deals and what's going on in the league. But he's put in his time. He put in his time at the obviously developed the very very astute, very intelligent. Basically developed the whole league when you think back to that. I think the Southern, I forget even the name of it, the Central Hockey League maybe is what they all started back then and worked his way up. He was a great, really a great partner for us and helped through a very difficult time during our ownership struggles. And I'm proud of him. He's done a terrific job in Calgary. He waltzed in there and he was patient and started jet-setting people out. He was added to his staff and they made the changes he felt he had to make. They run to the playoffs when unexpected. They beat a good Vancouver team. I mean, really, it was a great year. And you can't count Calgary up this year. They're a very good team. You look at that defense and you say that's as good as any team in the West, in my opinion. Now, they've had their struggles a little bit, as we all do, scoring at times and maybe the goaltending at times a little bit leaky. But that's a team to be reckoned with. They're young and they play a aggressive style, and that's all Brad. I'm really proud of the job he's done. I just don't want him to do it against us.
Final question for you, Don. You know, Glenn Sather recently stepped aside as Rangers GM, and you worked with Glenn for over 10 years. And it's probably a harder question, what was the one thing you learned from Glenn Sather over anything else while you worked with him?
He was not afraid to make a mistake. I mean, he was a decision maker. He didn't need a lot of time to make decisions, and if he made right or wrongly, he didn't fret upon it. He really trusted his instincts. I mean, I thought Glenn is the kind of person, the more you're around him, the more you like him. He's a good man, good family man, would give a shirt off your back when you're working for him. Didn't necessarily translate to contracts when I was working and trying to get my own contract, but in all seriousness, he really, but that was the biggest lesson I learned from Glenn is just, you know what, you make your decision, good or bad, don't fret upon it, try and help your club. Every day you wake up, and try and help your club get better. And if you do that, then you'll have success. And he was a terrific manager in this league, and hopefully he's around the league. I know the Ranger team are, they had their struggles maybe a little bit of late, but they'll be back to life. They're a team you reckon with, and that's all going. They've got a good organization over there.
Don Maloney is the Arizona Coyotes general manager. Don, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us, and best of luck in your game tonight against the Los Angeles Kings.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Take care, Don. Thanks again. Bye. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes before the top of the hour, a big thank you to Arizona Coyotes general manager Don Maloney for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, we'll put it up for download, available on legalcurve.com. It'll be on tsn1290.ca. Pretty much anywhere you need to find that interview, it'll have it. Real great insight. I love when you got a general manager who can speak honestly and passionately about those topics, and him addressing the John Scott saga as the most ridiculous thing he's ever had to go through. It's a guy who's been through a lot in the NHL and called a spade because it is that ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you guys heard my rant. Was this last Saturday?
I think so. It doesn't matter. I mean, thank God we're done with it, at least as far as I'm concerned.
But if you go back and you listen, that's exactly what I thought was the reason why.
Yep. Yeah.
Because they wanted Jared Tinordi.
Sure.
And the Canadians wanted Victor Bartley.
And if you pulled every other general manager in the NHL, they would take a chance on Jared Tinordi at the cost of John Scott. No questions asked. It's a no-brainer, of course.
Right. I mean, it wasn't just John Scott.
Of course, it wasn't just John Scott, but it all played into.
The point is that Don Maloney is a sharp guy, yeah. And he's had to work in, as you can hear, very difficult circumstances in terms of ownership and lack of finances and all that stuff. And they have a core. He mentions the young players that they have, whether it's Perlini, obviously, Dylan Strome, Domi, Duclair. And then you have Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's.
There's a core there.
Arguably a top five defenseman. Yeah, there is a core there.
There's a pretty solid core there.
You mentioned Richie Anthony Duclair. Yeah. I mean, of all the trades that have happened over the last just couple years, I mean, that Keith Yandel trade to the Rangers, and it looks like the Rangers might move Keith Yandel before the trade deadline. Yeah. Who knows? But Anthony Duclair and Nick Merkley for Keith Yandel
and looking
pretty good.
And more draft picks to come this year. I mean, that's not done. That trade is still paying off. It's one of those, a decade-defining trade for the Arizona Coyotes if Anthony Duclair continues to develop.
Yeah, I'm not sure his. I don't know enough about him. Some people I've talked to, I don't know if his top-end skill level is star potential,
mm-hmm.
But he's a real solid player, really good player.
Yes, he certainly is that. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
I wonder how many John Scott all-star jerseys Keener's going to get.
Well, what the unfortunate part is now is that this is the story that never ends. There's now people, honest to God, people get a life, seriously debating what jersey is he going to wear in the all-star game. I mean, honestly, please find something else. Charity work. Anything is better than spending your time having that conversation. Some moves from around the NHL earlier this week, or some news. At least we start with the Chicago Blackhawks and the Anaheim Ducks. The Ducks acquire Winnipeg's Ryan Garbutt from the Chicago Blackhawks in exchange for Jiří Sekáč. Turns out the Patrick Sharp trade has not really paid much dividends initially for the Chicago Blackhawks. Your thoughts on Garbutt for Sekáč?
You're right, Drew. I mean, it hasn't. It speaks to Joel Quenneville and again, he's a tremendous coach, but if you don't fit into his system, you don't fit into his system, and quick decisions are made. And you know, I'm going to give Stan Bowman credit here, because some general managers would be apt to hold on to two players they traded for a guy like Patrick Sharp, because, and then Sharp is not the player he was a few years ago, but the point, and he has a big ticket, but the point is they would be too prideful and say, you know what, I'm not going to trade these guys. I just made a move for a guy who scores a lot of goals, and I'm not going to look like I lost a quote-unquote a trade. And I like the ability to say, okay, I'm going to make a move. If it's not working, I'm going to make a move. And so, you know, Ryan Garbutt is not going to be, you know, an offensively skilled guy who's a big-time point producer, but he brings energy, and he is a physical player, sometimes on the edge. And I think Anaheim wanted to bring a little bit of an, you know, they have some guys who can be tough to play against, but you want to, you know, maybe you want some more. You know, Kessler, Getzlaf, those guys can be, Perry, guys can be dirty. Those guys can be on the edge, and that filled, you know, that fits in a little bit more to what they're doing. And Sekash, I think the thing with Sekash is he just, you know, to that point, he's not a guy who totally fit in. Like, he was a skilled player, and he will fit in skating-wise and you know, a little bit of his puck skills with Chicago, and the way Chicago plays is better off for his game. So I think this move is a change of scenery for both players. I think it makes sense for both teams, but it's not a team-defining by any means.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, you know, for Ryan Garbutt, you know, he might be leaving the former Stanley Cup champions, but he gets to go to a nice little hot state in California and play with Getzlaf, Perry, and Kessler. So for him, you know, it's not a demotion for him. Former Winnipeg South Blue, of course. But you know, Garbutt, you mentioned Richie. You know, he's a guy that, you know, a couple of years ago, he had 17 goals with the Dallas Stars. But he's more of a third line guy. Can lay the body, can drop the gloves if you need to. And yeah, Richie, he does have that agitator role to his game. And I think that does fit in more with Bruce Boudreau's Ducks. And as you mentioned, Sekach comes out of the KHL with the Montreal Canadiens a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he starts to score, and then he struggled. And he didn't play very well with the Ducks this year, wasn't providing them with much offense. I only think he had 2 goals with the Anaheim Ducks. I'm not sure exactly what it was. But, yeah, as Richie said, you know, this is a trade where both GMs are, I think, trying to catch lightning in a bottle a little bit.
Sure.
And, you know, you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, and even though they were going through this crazy winning streak, even though they've lost their last couple games here, losing Florida 4-0 last night, but, you know, Stan Bowman, pardon me, is not afraid to make moves, even though his team's winning. Gets Trevor Daley out of there, Richie, to Pittsburgh for Rob Scuderi. You know, moves Ryan Garbutt out to get Sekach. And, you know, he's just fine-tuning his roster, really, with the playoffs in mind.
And, you know, give Bob Murray here, he's a guy who is trying to shake things up.
Mm-hmm.
This, again, just gives your team a little bit of a different look. I think there's another move to come there from Anaheim, if not 2 or 3.
Well, there's a lot of talk, of course, that they're in on Jonathan Drouin.
I think other stuff, too, possibly.
Because they have a glut of high-quality defensemen. They had some injuries, so it hadn't been an issue, but they're all getting healthy there.
I know you want to get some other stuff here, Drew. On that point about the glut of real talented defensemen, I don't disagree that they have a glut of defensemen. I'm not so sure how many. They have an abundance of talent. I mean, the problem with Anaheim is probably they don't have that one guy who just dominates games. I mean, I like Lindholm. I like Vatanen.
Shea Theodore's been good, too.
Yeah, Theodore's been good, and I like Cam Fowler. I know some don't love Cam Fowler. I like all those defensemen, but they do have a lot of guys also who are kind of the same. Kevin Bieksa isn't what he once was.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, you hear, do they have to make a decision on Vatanen or Lindholm or Sant? That seems a bit overblown to me, and you have Fowler at a $4 million hit. I guess what I'm saying is don't confuse, I like their defense, but don't confuse quantity for quality here. And so it's not the most dominant defense. And if you're going to be trading a guy like, for example, Cam Fowler, are you comfortable with that defense core in a playoff series? Can your left side afford to lose a guy like that? I don't know. So I think some of that's a little bit overblown.
Well, they might. It might be the cost, though, if they continue to not be able to score, and that's been their big problem this year, is that the Ducks just can't score enough to.
That's kind of my point, right? Is if you're moving a puck moving defenseman, does that inhibit your ability to score too?
Sure, I mean you're right, because if you can't get the puck out of your own zone, it doesn't matter how good your forwards are. If
they don't have the fastest forward group,
right? So, anyways, it's something an interesting team, of course, to watch, as most of the teams are heading into the trade deadline period.
They have a slow forward.
Another 5 weeks from now, of course, we'll keep you up to date on everything related to that. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Brian Burke's suggestion about widening the ice surface. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life, coming up on June the 5th, 2016. That's about 6 months from now, give or take. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Alzheimer and Dementia Awards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life, or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or tweet at us at Illegal Curve, and we'll be sure to provide you with additional information.
I know the cycle's not happening until June, but I got to start exercising.
Well, you're going back to the Rady Center to get back in shape, to reclaim your glory days, so that you're able to complete the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life.
I can't even see my feet anymore. Like, I mean, it's got that bad. Like, you know, it's just months and months, and the Christmas season doesn't help. All of that, you know, just eating and chocolate.
Yeah, it's also bad when you celebrate all the different Christmases. You know, you're celebrating regular Christmas and Ukrainian Christmas, and then you're making, I mean, Chinese Christmas, I don't think exists. That's just a made-up holiday altogether. So, you know, that might be where a bit of your problem stems from there, Ezzy.
Glory days, here I come.
That would explain why you're not wearing any shoes today.
Yeah, he didn't know that he wasn't wearing shoes. He couldn't feel his feet.
Wearing snowshoes.
Yeah. Interesting column from Bob McKenzie on TSN.ca earlier this week about Brian Burke, Calgary Flames president, his suggestion that the NHL widen the ice surface by 5 feet.
Great idea.
It's currently 200 feet by 85 feet.
It's better than making the nets bigger, Drew. That's ridiculous.
He wants to widen the ice surface 200 feet by 90 feet. An extra 5 feet of width.
Closer to the international ice.
Closer. The international ice is too big. At 200 by 100 is what Burke says.
Yeah.
But he thinks that the 5 extra feet would make a world of difference. Here's the quote from Burke in the article from Bob McKenzie. If you really think about it, it's crazy that we are still using the same size ice surface as we started with in hockey. The players have gotten so much bigger and stronger. There's not enough room out there. It's too congested. An extra 5 feet would make a big difference. Do you agree with Mr. Brian Burke on this topic?
Before Richie gets in here, you guys know how much I love Brian Burke. Like, to me, he's one of the greatest figures in hockey. Like, anytime Brian Burke is being interviewed, I make a point of listening. I agree with almost everything that he says. Like, he's old school. And you know what I love about this article the most about Bob McKenzie wrote? He's been lobbying other teams who have been building new arenas to make the ice surfaces bigger. Like, Brian Burke cares about hockey that much, you know? And this makes sense.
That's true.
I mean, you and apparently he's been talking, Richie, to the Las Vegas group, their ownership group that's been responsible for making that a new arena on the Strip there, and apparently to no luck. But, I mean, why do you make the ice surface larger, right? Well, in short term, because it makes for more offense, right? And in international hockey, you think about how different international hockey is, and you could make the argument, well, actually, there's less goals. But, I mean, in the Olympics and stuff like that, I mean, you're really trying to clamp down, and you really don't want to make any mistakes because you're playing against other teams that are used to playing on the international ice hockey surface, right? But I like this, and I think he's thinking in terms of how to make the sport better, right? And I think you make you don't make the ice surface longer, you make it wider, because then there's more plays happening in the neutral zone. That's essentially what happens. You make the ice surface wider, you get the idea is you get less clogging up in the neutral zone, even though you do have some of that. I mean, you remember Germany in the Olympics, you know, having five guys at the blue line, stuff like that. But for the most part, you can exploit that. So, I mean, I'm in favor of this. I don't know if it'll happen, by the way.
Well, I think if it happens, and Bob points to it in the article, if it happens, it'll be over a very long period of time.
Sure.
And I'm in favor of it as well. 5 feet, I'm with Ezzy. I don't want to see the size of the nets increase. These guys are so big and so strong. I also agree with Brian Brook that the international ice is too big. But, you know, I think we all of us play hockey on a little bit of a bigger ice surface, and I think it's something that there can be a little bit more space out there. These guys are, as I just said, so big and so strong. There's so little room out there. There's so much video. And if you give the guys a little bit more space to make plays, I think, and it's, to be honest, it's probably safer as well in terms of contact and such, a little bit more room. I would guess probably would have a little bit less concussions too. So I think this makes a lot of sense. And as he's right about Brian Burke, you know, you have to love the game and want to campaign for this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him going around the league. And so it looks like Detroit and their new arena is going to be the only one who's going to build. So the issue is underneath the ice in most of these rinks, there's obviously a system to make sure the ice is proper, but it's not wide enough right now for 90 feet. So that's one issue. The other issue is all these teams don't want to get rid of that first row of seating, and they'll have to adjust it. Otherwise, at the same time, first of all, it's 5 feet. Second of all, I agree with the point in the article that, you know, Boston Garden, the old Odd, Chicago Stadium, not all the rinks were uniform back in the day, and, mm-hmm. and other sports, you deal with that too. Baseball, obviously, every diamond is different. But you also, even in football, like you have the end zone, is open wind one end zone, it's different configuration. So I have no issue with, over time, some arenas being 90 feet across and some arenas being the usual.
Yeah, Richie, you mentioned feet, sure. Detroit. Jim Devolano, the senior VP of the Red Wings, is quoted in this article being a big proponent of it. And, you know, it's been done at Boston University's mm-hmm. arena.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the wider ice surface. And it's like you mentioned, Drew. I mean, you quoted Brian Burke in the article. Players have gotten bigger and faster, and this is going to allow skilled players to do more in the neutral zone, where you build up speed and you make your entries and all that, right? So, I mean, it makes sense. To me, making the nets bigger and reducing goal equipment reducing goal equipment, maybe. I mean, some of the gloves and pads guys have gotten a little bit out of hand.
Reducing goalie equipment doesn't bother me. When you change the nets, it's, you know, the nets have been the same for right. you know, 80 years.
Right.
The rinks haven't always been the same, to your point, Richard, about Boston Gardens yeah. and Buffalo's Memorial Auditorium having slightly different ice surfaces. So there's never been complete and total uniformity when it comes to the rink sizes. The nets have always been the same. That's a bridge too far for me. But I think you also touched on really what the real wild card in this whole thing is. It's going to be the legalities and the lawsuits when it comes to concussions. If the NHL thinks, well, 5 more feet, maybe that prevents us from a few more concussions and mm-hmm. keeps us a little more lawsuit proof, that fewer lawsuits, you know, we're taking care of the players, then you might see it happen. But I don't see a tremendous downside to this idea, in that it would allow skill players to do more skill things.
Now, Richie, if people are thinking that this idea is not a good idea, think about Brian Burke and Jim Devolano, and I would consider these guys old school guys,
mm-hmm.
and these guys have been around hockey longer than anybody. These guys, you think these guys don't know what they're talking about? I mean, I wouldn't go up to Jim Devolano and say, oh yeah, all those year after year, you guys make the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've won Stanley Cups, all of this. You guys.
Well, Jimmy D was with the Islanders too during their run years ago.
Think about who you're talking about here. You're talking about guys that know what they're talking about in the hockey world. So, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it has gotten clogged up in the neutral zone, mm-hmm. and it's the exact opposite of, I think, what the worst-case scenario would be, where you have kind of teams and defensemen laying back. I mean, it's going to allow the skilled players to flourish, and if you don't think Brian Burke with guys like Sam Bennett and Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, I mean, sure, it's going to benefit his team, but it's going to benefit all teams.
I'm not even sure how much, like, a fan would really realize it.
They wouldn't. And you know, the argument that, oh, it'll get rid of more premium seating or whatever else.
Who cares about that?
These teams are pretty good at squeezing extra money from the fans when they need to.
I wouldn't be worried about that.
I'm not worried. I'm not going to take a tag day for any of the owners. They'll find a way to make up, to recoup whatever lost investment there might be by removing, you know, a couple seats here or there.
You mentioned the concussion. Just a quick tangent here. These concussion spotters, I know the NHL's got concussions.
Tits is a bull.
I'm just not buying that yet. I've seen a few games where you see a couple guys really get hit hard and their head kind of leaned over and they stay in the game and they play. So I'm not buying the concussion spotting. I'm not saying it's something they can improve and work on, but as of right now, I don't think it works.
Well, in the Jets-Sabres game a couple weeks ago, Sam Reinhart took two hits to the head from what we could see, looked slightly dazed, played the entire game. I mean, played well as it happens. But
a hat trick, right?
Yeah, you can't tell me that. Yeah. I mean, even though it might not immediately be a concussion, if you get hit in the head, you know, anybody gets hit in the head,
no, I mean,
they feel
some
pain.
The point would be to take a step back. So that's something that needs to be refined.
And I think the NHL maybe more than any other league has done a great job with their concussion protocols. I mean, they're protecting their players the best they can.
You know, I don't know if I agree. I'm not saying they're not putting the mechanisms in place to help right now. I'm just saying I'm not sure that they've been refined to a point that they're actually effective. That's all.
The game, I mean, these concussion spotters are, I think they're...
Just one small piece of it, right?
I know it's one small piece of it, but I think it's more window dressing than it is anything else.
I just don't know. I don't think the concussion spotters are experienced in concussion diagnosis. Therefore, just like you, Ezzy, and myself, we could guess, but we're not doctors. And so unless you have, and to my knowledge, and maybe I'm wrong, to my knowledge, the concussion spotters are not all medical doctors. Therefore, the symptoms and such and the things you look for, I might be wrong, unless I'm wrong about that.
You're hundreds of feet away. It's not like you're down in the trenches. I mean, you know, if you're hundreds of feet away and you see Sam Bennett, you know, get hit in the head twice in that game, and they weren't, you know, the biggest hits ever, but they were certainly contact to the head, I thought. How do you know what he's going through from hundreds of feet away up in the press box? I mean, you know, if he's sitting on the bench vomiting as a result of the hits, then yeah, sure. But you have no idea. I mean, it's a nice idea, but I just think it's impractical unless you're right down in the trenches with the players and seeing how they react on a shift-by-shift basis afterwards.
Regardless, if none of us are doctors, Drew, you'll still take a look.
And I still play one on radio. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the league at some of the trade chatter as the trade talk heats up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Eleven 15 in the morning, the 23rd of January. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Get your dialing fingers ready, 780-1290. First, we'll take second caller through. We'll win two tickets to Rumors on Tuesday night to see K. Trevor Wilson, a tremendous comedian. 780-1290 right now. Give Rory a call, and you can win tickets to Rumors for this coming Tuesday.
You know, Drew, as you know, I went to go see Donnell Rawlings on Wednesday night with Michael Remus, a.k.a. The Station, and it was unbelievable. And I bought these tickets a couple of months ago. And he was so funny, and I know all of his shows for the rest of the weekend are sold out.
Yes.
So you're not, unfortunately, going to be able to buy tickets, but he was hilarious. You know, he was, of course, on the Chappelle Show. He was actually on the Wire, if you remember that show on HBO.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was on for well over an hour, and, you know, he was great.
There you go. So Donnell Rawlings all sold out. Kate Trevor Wilson starting next week, so be sure to get your tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. some trade chatter from throughout the NHL. Let's start with the one that supposedly has been involving the Winnipeg Jets. That's Florida Panthers winger Brandon Peary. He's been a healthy scratch, or he was a healthy scratch Friday against the Chicago Blackhawks. A lot of chatter that there's some Central Division teams that are interested in acquiring Brandon Peary. You know, what is Brandon Peary as a player? Do you think that he can help some teams that are in need of goal scoring?
Well, he's a scorer. I mean, he's a shooter. So, yeah, I think he can help some teams in terms of goal scoring. Drew, is he top end guy? No. But he puts that puck on the net. Like, he's not afraid to shoot the puck. And he's at an age where he's probably pretty appealing. You know, do you worry about the RFA status at season end and negotiating with him through the threat of arbitration? Sure, and I think those are factors, no doubt about it. But he's at $925,000. He's only 24 years old, and you know, you hear some stuff about the Jets possibly being interested. Well, there's those Blackhawk ties, right, Drew?
Sure.
He was drafted 2009 by the Blackhawks. We know that Kevin Cheveldayoff worked with the Blackhawks before coming to Winnipeg, so he'd be familiar with Brandon Peary, and he'd have a background on Brandon Peary. And the guy scored 22 goals last year in only 49 games. So, I mean, you know, he's a scorer. He's got 9 this year. And he can help a team put the puck in the net. Now, is he going to make his teammates better? I don't think so. But if you can score, there's a place for you.
And you haven't even addressed the fact that the Jets could get a Cy Young Award winner. He was 22-2 last year.
22 goals, 2 assists was a stat line last year. That's what you're referencing there, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's very clever.
I thought that was kind of clever.
Yeah, it was very clever. We're very proud of you.
Crickets.
Try the veal, Drew.
Thank you. In Boston.
Try the steak, too.
Bruins general manager Don Sweeney was discussing pending unrestricted free agent Louis Erickson.
Hold on, I'm not even going to give my analysis on Brandon
Peary.
Oh,
yeah, I forgot about
come
you.
On, Drew. Sorry.
I have some good points here, Drew.
Feel free. Make those good points because they better be better than that joke because that wasn't very good at all.
I have nothing. No, I mean, Richie mentioned it. I mean, Brandon Peary, he's a shooter. You know, he's 24 years old, and Rich mentioned, you know, Lawman was all over this a couple of nights ago that Florida was looking to move in, and the Jets could be one of those teams that were interested in him. But he could definitely help the Jets, who are struggling to score goals right now, but he's not much of a playmaker, and, you know, that's pretty obvious, the fact that he only had 2 assists last year. But he's got some good speed, and especially, Richie, I think if the Jets were going to trade for him and then sign him, because I don't think you want to have a situation. Well, I don't think the Jets are in a position to rent a player right now either.
No, but I mean, he's RFA, right?
Right.
So, I mean, mm-hmm. Are you concerned about arbitration? Well, I mean, his numbers right now aren't going to kill you in arbitration, 21 points in 46 games. How concerned you'd be about that?
He's got a scoring touch, and whether it's the Jets, the Hawks, or the Minnesota Wild, who are the other team that was rumored to be interested in him, he could definitely help you score. And the Wild or another team, I mean, there's a lot of teams, Drew, right now, that are having trouble scoring goals. And I think that's why guys leading up until the trade deadline, not that defensemen aren't going to be sought after, but I think scoring is going to be more sought after than in previous years, because you have a lot of teams right now that are having trouble putting the puck in the net.
You certainly are. In Boston, Louis Erickson is an unrestricted free agent at season's end. Bruins general manager Don Sweeney on Erickson, quote, "All along, we value Louis as a player. We love what he brings to our hockey club, and we'd like to be able to keep him. However, if a deal doesn't take shape, obviously have to do due diligence and explore whether or not we can continue to improve our team." So the question really is, do you think Louis Erickson is going to be a Boston Bruin, or on March 1st, do you expect that he's going to be somewhere else as a member of a different team acquired in a trade?
That's a really good question. You look at the Boston Bruins, Drew, in a playoff spot, it's so tight at the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoffs and the chase for it, and you have some teams that might be a better quality. You say Pittsburgh, Montreal, although, and I've said on the air, Boston's defense to me leaves much to be desired. But, and you have Louis Erickson. I think another factor here is Louis Erickson is part of that Sagan deal. So Don Sweeney isn't the guy who made that deal for Boston. But it's one of those things where how much do you have to show for it at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm.
You would hope that from a perspective, I think as a Bruins fan perspective, you wouldn't want that to play a huge factor. Cap-wise, though, what do you have moving forward? You're paying Krejci and Bergeron big money. You know you're gonna have to pay some defensemen here, obviously Torrey Krug being the main one. how much do you want to lock into Erickson long term and forward? I see him staying. I see what he brings to the table, being a good two-way player, being able to shoot, being responsible, maybe being over the concussion stuff that certainly set him back for a while there. He is a good player. I see him sticking around in Boston, but they do have to watch locking in too much money into an older core. And you know, Bergeron and Krejci, two very good players, but basically 30 and 29 and 30 respectively. If Eriksson's 30, which he is, then you lock him up long-term, and you have a bunch of guys who are 35 making big money, and that's a risky proposition. So I think they find a way to make it work, but I don't know if they – I don't think he's getting over a four-year deal.
How much can he expect? I mean, he's sort of – you know, his contributions don't always show up on the score sheet.
Yeah, he's a good player, Drew. I mean, I probably see him. They're locking him up. It's probably something like, what, 4 years, $20 million?
So a bit of a raise over what he currently makes, which is 4.25 per year. That's his cap hit. The team very tight against the salary cap heading into next year.
Yeah,
which
that, I mean, you know, exactly. You're looking at similar hit, but you do have to pay a guy like Krug. So, mm-hmm. And other defense, you only have two guys under contract next year. On the back end, Sadenberg and Chara.
And he's been very good this year, Richie. He's got 38 points in 45 games. He's one of the top scorers for the Boston Bruins. And I think Louis Erickson, you know, what's going against him is the fact that he was traded for Tyler Seguin and the fact that he didn't have a very good year last year. But you're talking about a guy that had three consecutive 70-point seasons for the Dallas Stars. I agree with Rich. I think I'm not sure if he is going to stay there, but I think he should stay there. I mean, I don't think they have enough natural goal scorers and enough natural playmakers that they can afford to lose him. And the Boston Bruins, I mean, I know they have some, you know, good young talent,
you're right,
you know, coming up and stuff like that. But, I mean, after you know, Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron and, you know, they lost Carl Soderberg to the Colorado Avalanche, who's been a nice signing for Joe Sakic. I don't know if they can afford to lose him. You're with Rich. I mean, he's a valuable player, and it's not like, you know, he's in the last couple of years of his career here. I mean, he's got a lot of good hockey in front of him. So I realize he's a pending UFA, Drew, but, I mean, with the Boston Bruins and the lack of elite goal scorers that they have, I think you got to hang on to him.
This one's really interesting because of how much you have guys in Spooner and Pasternak who have a year left after this season, who are going to, depending on how well they play, and you assume they probably play pretty well, going to get paid. So you can have a lot of money up there on the front end. But you know, you see the way they did it with Krug, for example. They were able to get a short deal out of him and deal with it, you know, kind of contract by contract, not lock everybody in long term. The other flip side is, if you fall out of the spot, right now you're in a playoff spot. So that's why I think he probably sticks around, and because I think he provides value and is a shooter. We can't shoot the puck and can do different things for you. He's got a really good wrist shot. But if you look at what he gets you in the market, I mean, that's the kind of guy every team would be looking for. So you could get quite a bit, but then, you know, it's that rock and hard place thing. If you're a playoff team, as we said, the Jets are almost fortunate with Ladd and Buffalo to be able to make an easier decision to make because they're not in the playoffs and can't sign. And if you're in the playoffs and can't sign the guy, you're really in a tough spot. That's kind of where Boston is right now.
In San Jose, this is according to Pierre Lebrun, Pat Brisson, the agent for Patrick Marleau, continues to quietly explore the trade market as he was given permission to do earlier in the season. There was a lot of talk a number of months ago that Patrick Marleau was on his way out of San Jose. That's died down, but apparently it's still possible that that's going to heat back up before the February 29th trade deadline.
You hear such conflicting stories on that. I mean, right now San Jose is in second spot in the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
And they're slated to face, if the playoffs started today,
Vancouver,
who they likely beat, in my opinion. So you're looking at a possible matchup again with those vaunted LA Kings. I don't see Marleau getting moved. I really don't.
Yeah, and we've been talking about this for, well, not just this season. We've been talking about this for a couple of years now, that Patrick Marleau, who spent his entire career in San Jose, Drew, is going to be traded. So, I mean, at this point, I have no idea if he's going to be traded. I agree with Richie, though, that if the San Jose Sharks continue to be in second or third place in the Pacific Division and continue to have favorable playoff positioning. How do you move a guy like Patrick Marleau, who plays on the penalty kill, he plays on the power play, plays in all situations. He hasn't slowed down at all, you know, as far as production goes. I mean, he slowed down a little bit in foot speed maybe, but I mean, you got to have him on your team.
He still skates real well, and I think it's, and I see you mean him in terms of how he's one of the best skiers in the league. Still skates well, though. And I see your point there, though, because, you know, there's only a few players who can skate the level he does, and even if he takes a step back, he still is in the high-end guys who can move around. But I think Yezzy's observation is correct there. But you look at it. They're three games in hand on Vancouver, okay? Mm-hmm.
That division is terrible.
Right, but division is terrible, but...
Do you trade him if you're going to be a second-round playoff team? Because it seems, you know...
Against your nemesis that you have put on the brink of elimination before, and you do play. You have a contrast in style there with that team, and there is a lot of talent on that side. I mean, you saw them come through Winnipeg. They sure controlled the puck a heck of a lot. And Martin Jones against his old team in L.A. and
lightning in a bottle.
Again, I don't want to look too far. They could struggle and miss the playoffs. But if you're Patrick Marleau, if you're unhappy with the organization, doesn't part of you... get motivated by the possibility of conquering old demons?
I think so. I mean, I just don't see why what the urgency is to make that trade.
Drew, shouldn't we have said lightning in a bottle when we were talking about
That's
Jonathan
true.
Drouin?
We could. We could have done that.
That would have made more sense.
Yes. One last one before we bring in Andy Strickland next segment to talk about the St. Louis Blues. Dallas Stars, they're in the market for a top defenseman, according to Pierre LeBrun.
Well, that's something we asked Mike Hajka about in September.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. I mean, you look at that roster, that defense, it's just not good enough to beat. Offensively, they're one of the best in the league, if not the best. But defensively, are they good enough in a 6-7 game series against the Chicago Blackhawks?
They could definitely use a veteran shutdown defenseman. Think, you know, back when the LA Kings acquired a guy like Robin Regier from the Calgary Flames. Mm-hmm. I could see them trying to get a defenseman like that. I don't know if if a number one or number two defenseman exists on the trade market. I just don't think those guys are on the trade market. I don't think you can get those guys anymore.
I tend to agree with you, as it'll be interesting. But Jim Neal's been able to pull a rabbit out of the hat on more than one occasion.
No, and getting Johnny Oduya was a good start, and you know, signing John Klingberg to an extension. He had a great rookie season last year. I think they're better than they were. Jason Demers, I think, has worked out really nice for Dallas. But I think you're right. They're still looking for a D-man, like a lot of teams are.
And supposedly the St. Louis Blues have a D-man up for auction. Let's go to break when we come back. St. Louis Blues reporter Andy Strickland is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Andy Strickland. Andy covers the St. Louis Blues for Fox Sports Midwest. Andy, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Hope all is well. You staying warm up there or what?
The weather's actually turned to be quite decent today. It's right around freezing. So for Winnipeg, we're all wearing shorts and going swimming.
Sure you are.
We're actually wearing Afghans, Andy.
Yeah, exactly.
Andy obviously brought you on to talk about the St. Louis Blues. A lot of smoke lately around the Blues in terms that there might be in on various trades. Are they in on Jonathan Drouin? Is Kevin Shattenkirk on the market? Is David Backes on the market? Do you believe that there's actually this much, that there's a pending, there's a trade happening for the Blues that you expect to come down the pipe between now and the trade deadline?
Well, they're in a win-now mentality, so whatever they do, it's going to be in an effort to help this hockey team, go deep into the playoffs. I mean, that's what they expect from themselves, and, that was the expectations that were laid out before the season. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. With a guy like David Backes, I don't see him going anywhere. He's got a no-move clause. They certainly need him down the stretch. Same can be said for Kevin Shattenkirk, although his situation's a little bit different when you consider how much money he's going to be owed at the end of his contract and what Doug Armstrong elects to do. This is not a hockey decision when it comes to Kevin Shattenkirk. This is purely a business decision. And we all know that the sooner you trade a player like a Shattenkirk, the longer he has left on his contract, I think the more you can expect to get in return. And teams, you know, are certainly going to be more interested in trading for a player like him with at least a year on his contract left, if not more, to give themselves a chance to re-sign him. So, listen, the Blues are about to have Kevin Shattenkirk here long-term. I'm not going to sit here and say that he won't be here long-term. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I think if you're Doug Armstrong or any GM in the National Hockey League, that's your responsibility is to explore all options and to take care of your hockey club to put yourself in the best position to win, not just now, but also long-term. So you never want to give up a player like Kevin Shattenkirk. I hope he doesn't. I hope he stays here. He's a hell of a player. I think he's among the most underrated offensive defensemen in the National Hockey League today. He's got 9 goals in the season. He's played 10 fewer games than most players around the league when you consider his injury that he had earlier this season. You go back to last year, he was leading all players, not just defensemen and power play points, before he went down with a groin injury and he missed 25 games down the stretch. Could have been a Norris Trophy finalist if he didn't miss those 25 games. So this guy's a hell of a player. But trying to guess how this is going to play out really is difficult to do right now.
Yeah, I agree with you, Andy. I mean, you would know this better than I would, but I don't know if the St. Louis Blues can afford to lose a player, a defenseman, like Kevin Shattenkirk. I'm a big Kevin Shattenkirk fan, as I am of most of the Blues defense. It's one of the best defenses in the league. When you look at this team, and as you mentioned, the St. Louis Blues aren't just going to be happy making the playoffs. I mean, they have aspirations to go further. They want to beat the Chicago Blackhawks and get to the Stanley Cup Finals. But do you believe this team is good enough as it's currently constructed to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, what they've been trying to do for so many years now?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if it's possible. I mean, obviously, you look at Chicago and how well they've played. I know they've dropped a couple of games now, but you know, they just went on that long stretch. And, you know, there's nights where they look unbeatable. The reality is the Blues have had some success against Chicago. Regular season, obviously they went head-to-head the postseason a few years back. I mean, I think every game was a one-goal game, or at least close to it. St. Louis had a 2-0 series lead. So obviously played very, very close. You know, when you consider the familiarity between those two teams and how often they see one another, the Blues are not intimidated by the Chicago Blackhawks. It's very interesting. You know, they're comfortable playing inside either building. They're going to be in Chicago tomorrow, the Blues' last game before the All-Star break. So, you know, sometimes it's all about just gigging. If you continue to get in year after year, you got to figure at some point you're going to find a way to break through. Although the Blues now, I mean, they made the playoffs, what, 26 straight years, 24 straight years, something like that, years ago. I mean, the streak was broken just after the 2004-2005 lockout. And they never went to the Stanley Cup Finals in any of those 20-plus years. They went to the third round a couple of times. So, but at some point, you got to figure you're going to be able to break through. It comes down to goaltending, guys. You guys know this. You watch hockey. You got to have goaltending. Jake Allen's had a spectacular season. Obviously, he's sidelined right now with an injury. If he's capable of being that guy, anything is possible. I mean, it's not, you know, would it be an upset if the Blues beat Chicago? Some would look at it that way. But it wouldn't be as big of an upset as maybe it appears when you consider how much talent the Blues have in the roster.
And Ken Hitchcock his resume is long, and he's so qualified, and he's won the Cup, and he's won Olympic gold medals, and there's really nothing else to do. Of course, you always try to win. Is this his, if the Blues aren't able to make a run at, to Ezra's question before, is this his final season in St. Louis?
Well, you know, I include him, guys, as a free agent. I got to be honest with you. You talk about Troy Brower, who's a UFA after this year. You look at Shattenkirk, who's got another year on his contract, and he's UFA. David Backus is a UFA after this year. All these names that are being brought up. I throw Ken Hitchcock in there, too. I mean, people were questioning whether or not he was going to finish the season like 2 weeks ago. Now I hear people putting him in the Jack Adams conversation, okay, because of how many injuries they've had, how they've been able to keep their head well above water. I think they're fifth right now in the league in points. So, you know, he's going to have options, too. It's not just for the team to decide, well, do we want to bring Ken Hitchcock back or not? You know, he's going to be able to decide what he wants to do as a free agent. One thing about Doug Armstrong and Ken Hitchcock, these two guys know each other very well. Ton of respect on both sides. They know how to work with one another. They both enjoy working with one another. And so they'll be able to figure that out amongst themselves. You know, Ken Hitchcock is no spring chicken. We know that. I think the Blues would like to find, you know, a coach at some point in time here whether it's after this year or after the next year or whatever that is, who they can continue to grow long-term with, and just the reality of the situation, because Hitchcock's not 45, right? He's closer to 65 than he is 45. So eventually you're going to have to turn that page. When that is remains to be seen, because they continue to win games. And getting back to your previous question, you know, can they beat Chicago? I really think if you look at the Blues in terms of what they need, if they're going to compete with a team like Chicago, they could probably use some additional scoring. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an area Doug Armstrong may look to address at the deadline if he can, making a hockey trade, trying to find some additional offense. Much easier said than done to be able to do that at the trade deadline. But if you're going to compete with Chicago, you're going to have to find a way to outscore them.
Yeah, you know, to add to that point, what do you give up? Like, what are the big assets that the Blues would be able to get out to give up to get something that would help their offense?
Well, that's one thing that Doug Armstrong has been pretty much public about saying. He's not looking to give up draft picks or assets. You know, I mean, I think if you're looking at, you know, allowed teams now, it's not just St. Louis who are going to make moves at the trade deadline. These are going to be hockey trades. And we're starting to see some hockey trades, right? It kind of started with Nashville and Columbus with the Ryan Johansson deal, and Seth Jones obviously involved there. I mean, that was being talked about for several weeks before it eventually got done. We saw Chicago make the deal, you know, with Ryan Garbutt, obviously with
Anaheim.
Yeah, for sick ass.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, another hockey trade, right? Chicago's looking to get some additional speed in their lineup, like they need it, but that's what they wanted. So you're just going to see more and more of those type of trades. I don't think we're going to see a ton of these rental-type deals for first-round picks that we've seen over the last several years, giving up first-round picks, high picks. So I don't think that's going to happen as much. Those have proven that they don't always work out. I know last year Chicago gave up a first-round pick for Antoine Vermette, and someone said, well, it really worked out because he scored some important goals in the playoffs, which he did, but he was also a healthy scratch down the stretch in the regular season. They didn't know how he was going to fit in. Mm-hmm. He was the third-line center. Now he's the number one center in Arizona. I think we're going to see more and more teams go away from doing that, at least this year at the trade deadline, and really look at more and more hockey trades if they can. So it's going to be interesting to see how much activity there is this year.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Andy Strickland. Andy covers the St. Louis Blues for Fox Sports Midwest. Andy, Jaden Schwartz has been out of the Blues lineup since very early this season after he fractured his leg. He's just returned to practice, apparently, a few days ago. What's the expectation when Schwartz will be back in the Blues lineup? And how key of an addition will that be to address some of the Blues' lack of scoring?
Well, it's going to be huge. I mean, you think about getting a player at the trade deadline. How about Jaden Schwartz? I mean, that's the way you have to look at this. He's been skating on his own for several days before joining the team now on this road trip and starting to get in a little bit of practice time, although you don't have a whole lot of practices this time of year. So if you want to call morning skates practices, then that's about all the practice time he's going to get right now. But he still has a ways to go. I don't think he'll be back immediately after the All-Star break, but obviously shortly thereafter. And he's going to be huge. This guy scored 53 goals over the course of the last two seasons. He's arguably the smartest player that they have. He's extremely intelligent hockey player. He can play the power play. He can certainly kill penalties at a real high level. He can play against the other team's best players. Very good down low, below the circles in terms of his ability to protect the puck for a smaller player, as good as there is in the National Hockey League. He's a little quick change of direction in terms of what he's able to do, and he's a playmaker too. And when given the opportunity, he can finish from the top of the circles down as well. So we all know Jaden Schwartz is a really, really talented hockey player. So the fact that they're going to get him at this point in the season is going to be a big-time bonus, and it should help this hockey club offensively. You know, for a while this season, it was Tarasenko and it was Alexander Steen and Shattenkirk. They were pretty much doing, you know, all the damage offensively. Now we're starting to see a little more secondary scoring. We're starting to see some younger players get involved. Ty Ratty scored some goals, some real big goals last week. Robbie Fabry's been a huge addition to this hockey club in this rookie season. He's got 11 goal guys, and all of those goals are even strength. I mean, 11 even strength goals for a rookie. Just turned 20 years old yesterday. You know, Dmitry Yastin got a goal, a huge goal in Detroit the other day. They're getting some real positive play on the back end from some young guys like Parayko and Edmondson. So it's really a nice mixture of youth to go along with some of the veteran core players who have been here for quite some time.
Andy, you just mentioned Robbie Fabry, and I agree with you. He's having a great rookie season. Earlier this week, there were a lot of trade rumors with Jonathan Drouin possibly coming to St. Louis in exchange for Robbie Fabry. Have those rumors died down a little bit? And do you think Jonathan Drouin would be a good fit for St. Louis?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, the definition of rumor is just like, what is the definition of rumor? Because it's not fact, right? I mean, it's like these things that get thrown out there, they just get a little bit crazy. But I can tell you this right now, the Blues are not going to trade Robbie Fabbri for a guy who not only is trying to force his way out of an organization, but, you know, obviously hasn't done a whole lot at the NHL level. It's going to be, I think that would be a difficult player for the Blues to part with right now when you consider how well Robbie Fabbri has played. I mean, he's a core player for the hockey club now. He's gotten more and more trust from Ken Hitchcock. He's playing, you know, deeper into games. You're seeing him get an opportunity in overtime, you know, which he wasn't getting much of the season. He's getting critical ice down the stretch, close games as well. He's playing with, you know, Vladimir Tarasenko right now, so obviously he's getting an opportunity to play, you know, some, you know, get some offensive zone start times and play with the Blues' best, you know, offensive weapon, arguably a top five offensive weapon in the National Hockey League. So Robbie Fabbri isn't going anywhere. That's one of those rumors, guys, that for me personally, I just didn't pay attention to.
You know, final question for you, Andy. You mentioned Jake Allen being out, but having played well, and Brian Elliott both having the numbers. Do you think that the players are confident in those two netminders, confident enough in those two netminders when it comes to a playoff series?
I don't think there's any question. I don't think they care who's in goal. I mean, Jake Allen was spectacular. I think he was the reason why they were winning a lot of games early on. Struggled a little bit right before his injury. Maybe hit a wall, who knows. But he's been a number one at every stop along his career as well. Best player in the American Hockey League his final year down there. And this is just all part of the evolution of a goaltender. Has some experience, some really, really you know, strong experience when you consider the fact that the last year as a rookie he you know, got the nod in the playoffs, and even though they didn't win, that's still experience he can put in his back pocket and rest on when you get to the playoffs this year. But I don't think there's any question he's the Blues' number one goaltender. And when he gets back in there, assuming he's able to rediscover his game that he had early on the season, he's going to be the guy. But this is why you need two goaltenders in the NHL. Brian Elliott is a true professional. This guy prepares as well as any goaltender I've ever seen, even when he's not playing, which is why he's able to transition into you know, game action so easily after having a long stretch when he's not playing. So the Blues are real fortunate to have two goaltenders who can, you know, basically get hot and play well for you know, a given stretch of games.
And, Andy, if they need to, they can always put Marty Brodeur back between the pipes.
How about that? You know, I mean, that's the injury. I think the same injury that Jake Allen has right now, a very similar injury to what Brian Elliott had last year, which led to the Blues signing Martin Brodeur. I was talking to him about that the other day. And, you know, he's obviously content being the assistant GM now and not playing. He said it was hard, though, last year when the playoffs began, first game of the playoffs. And all of a sudden, you know, just kind of all the excitement, the anticipation, the adrenaline inside the building. And to watch that, I think, was a little bit difficult. But I think it's going to be a lot easier this go around for Martin Brodeur.
Andy Strickland covers the St. Louis Blues for Fox Sports Midwest. Andy, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, anytime, guys. Take care.
Take care, Andy. Thanks very much. Time to break. When we come back, one final segment this Saturday morning. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bruce Springsteen brings us back for one final segment, as he does every Saturday.
Take it.
A little tribute to Glenn Frey and the Eagles there. Nice find there, Richie. Where'd you dig that one up from?
That was not me. That was Chris Curry.
Really?
Yes.
I like
he emailed me during the week with an awesome find, and he sent it on to Rory and get it played. He knows the Bruce love, and they covered it in a tribute to the Eagles. That's awesome.
Everybody's giving 110% on this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Rapid Fire.
Eagles was one of the best concerts I've ever been to.
Yeah, I went to that concert with Ezzy and his dad and his sister.
Yep. Shout out to the Ginsburgs.
So you're an honorary Ginsburg is what you're saying.
Yeah, that was one of the best shows I've ever seen.
On Thursday night, Canucks forward Henrik Sedin scored his 347th career goal, passing Marcus Naslund for the most goals scored in a Canucks uniform. Do you expect both, neither, or only one of the Sedin brothers to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame at the conclusion of their careers?
I think Henrik, not Daniel.
So one.
I'm joking, Drew.
Okay.
I mean, they're the same.
I know.
True. I mean, it's either they're both getting in or not.
They're actually going to be the first to actually be on the same plaque. Like, they're not going to go in individually. They're going to go in together. I mean, okay, the obvious knock against the Sedins is they haven't ever won the Stanley Cup, right?
Right.
But as far as their offensive production and what they've done for the Vancouver Canucks, I mean, they're Hall of Famers, in my opinion. I mean, these are two of the look over the last 12 years now, 14 years. I mean, they've been right up there. And Henrik Sedin won the Art Ross Trophy 1 year. I mean, and these are two of the greatest Swedish players of all time. So it's an interesting debate for sure. But I would say, sure, if you look at their careers, their Hall of Fame careers.
I think they probably both get in. I always find the Hall of Fame debate so hard. I mean, you know, you're going to have guys get in who, you know, they won the Olympic gold in 2006.
Yep.
They've been dominant players. They were dominant players for a long period of time. I mean, people don't remember that it took them a while to get to that point. Like, they did not, they were that second line behind Bertuzzi, Naslin, and Morrison for a while. And then they obviously came to their kind of their peak later on in their career when you wouldn't expect it, right? I mean, peaking, I think, what, 2010-11 would be Daniel's best season, 104 points, which is 20 or 19 more than any other season that he had. I think they probably do. I'm not sure if I see the Sedins as Hall of Famers, but I usually have that as a rare class. And I'd probably be more picky if it was my rules, but I think they probably both get in.
Oilers forward Matt Hendricks took a blistering slap shot to his twig and berries on Thursday night, shattering his protective cup. Hendricks had just returned from a suspension
saying that with a straight face?
For a headshot on Panthers defenseman Aaron Ekblad.
Dirty hit.
This is the hockey gods exacting retribution and an appropriate price to pay for a dirty hit or an unjust punishment that no man ever deserves to feel.
Don't mess with the hockey gods, Drew. By the way, did you see his cup? I mean, have you ever seen a cup shatter like that before? I mean, all the years I've played hockey, it's never happened before. But I just hope that you know, his manhood's okay.
My cousin had an incident with a hockey cup, but we won't get into that.
He did.
He was in goal.
Yeah.
He's shattered.
Real unfortunate one, too. Yeah. We won't talk about it.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg.
Just quickly, I usually don't ever do a jeer. I'm going to do a jeer and cheer. I'm going to jeer Jonathan Drouin. Grow up. You have a job to do. Despicable. I mean, you know, if you want to have a career in the NHL, you're going to have to change your attitude. That's my jeer. My cheer is going to be to my nephew, Hunter. I'm going to go watch him play hockey after this. He's 6 years old. He's playing Timbits hockey. He was voted player of the game today.
Oh.
So he had a big game. So my six-year-old nephew, Hunter, gets my cheer.
There you go. That's very nice.
And you're bringing him Timbits.
That's right.
It all works.
That's Timbits hockey for you, too.
There you go. While watching hockey, he's going to be eating Timbits.
Every time there's a goal, he's going to score.
That's right. He's going to eat a Timbit. It's exactly like that.
I'm going to be along the same lines. I'm going to give a jeer to Alan Walsh as he's giving it to Drew. And I'm giving it to Walsh. Taking it just way too far here. And this is not a guy who is, you know, I've said what I think about this, but he's not Steven Stamkos. So he's not an established guy like this. This is way too far, and you're giving the player, and I don't know if he's taking the player's orders or not, but in my opinion, it looks like you're leading the player the wrong way, and that deserves a jeer.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers by giving my cheer, and I'm sure from you guys as well, to Boston Pride forward Denna Lang, who suffered a severe spinal cord injury. You know, the hockey world is rallying around her, and she's had a tremendous attitude in the face of all this tremendous adversity. So we're going to give her our cheer and send her our best thoughts in her long recovery ahead of her. So best thoughts to her and to the hockey world for rallying around her.
Absolutely.
That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Matt Lachlan, Devils broadcaster, Arizona Coyotes general manager Don Maloney, and Andy Strickland, St. Louis Blues reporter. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Mike, Keener Jerseys, and the Rady Fitness Center. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, great job behind the board today, my man. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.